Hello and welcome to the Mobility Podcast, recording live from the Automated Vehicle Symposium in Orlando, Florida. We're going to be here all week and have an all-star lineup of guests, so make sure to subscribe and check back daily for all the great episodes to come.
We're also going to have some great tans by the end of this.
Or not.
Or not.
We're not leaving this room because we have so many great guests. So I'm your co-host, Pete Gould, with Shared Mobility Strategies.
And I'm Greg Rogers with Securing America. With Securing America's Future Energy, or SAFE. And I will say on behalf of Greg Rodriguez, views are our own.
Yes. And today we are pleased to be joined by Dr. Johanna Zmud, the Senior Research Scientist at the Texas Transportation Institute, known as TTI's. Dr. Zmud is a head of the TTI's Multimodal Planning Division, which is comprised of travel, forecasting, transit mobility, and planning and engagement programs. Her specific research expertise covers a range of topics from automated and connected vehicle policy to travel behavior analysis, including the influence of changing socio-demographics, proliferation of transportation alternatives to private vehicle ownership, and the impacts of new technology. So her research is often focused on closing the gap between changing mobility, technological development, and public policymaking activity, which is a very good fit because that's exactly what we've been looking to do here on the podcast. So Dr. Zmud, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Perfect. So I guess to kick it off, tell us a bit about your work that you're doing at TTI to understand the impacts of AVs and these mobility services.
Right. As you alluded to in my biography, I'm a social scientist, so I'm a little unusual in this group of people who are out here today who are mostly engineers. And so what I like to do is study what I call the social influence on technology. So my colleagues and I at TTI have been looking at the factors that influence acceptance and trust in automated vehicles. And we've been doing this for the last 5 years. Luckily, we've had funding sources from various sponsors to be able to do that.
And now, does that funding come from the public sector or the private sector?
Both. But primarily from the public sector. I mean, we work for cities, we work for the state of Texas, we've worked for the national academies and the DOT, but there are some private sector sponsors of that as well. For instance, we're working with Avis Budget Group right now, looking at how the these new technologies will affect the rental car business. And then also we did a study for Lyft last year, looking at whether or not users of new mobility services like ride-hailing would be early adopters of automated vehicles. And it turns out the relationship is very strong. Not only were users of ride-hailing services likely to be early adopters of automated vehicles, but the longer they had been using the ride-hailing service, the stronger their relationship was.
Huh, that's really interesting.
Yeah, and we were joking, we could do an entire episode on that. But now, you presented on the fascinating topic, again, of public acceptance of AVs. Can you tell us a little bit about your findings, kind of the Cliff Notes version of the presentation for those who weren't able to attend?
Sure. Well, you know, as a survey researcher, I always take polling results and survey results with a little grain of sand because I'm curious about how they were done. But one of the two easy questions I always ask is, which people are we talking about? Do the results cover? And which type of level of vehicles are the results talking about? Because there are differences across those. So in terms of the Cliff Notes of what people really think about self-driving vehicles, trust is a big issue. It's a recurring issue. And part of the reason why there are trust issues is because the technology is so new. People equate the computer in a car to their smartphone or their laptop, and so they know they have glitches with that, and so they worry about software glitches in their cars. They also worry that the technology is not foolproof because they've experienced these other technologies, and so they want to make sure they can take over it at any time. And finally, people are really concerned that the computers really can't deal with unexpected situation. Will it react fast enough if a child runs into the road, for instance? And so, and a lot of the knowledge that people get about self-driving vehicle is really based on what they read in the media. And we know that the media sometimes is not hype-free, but hype-full.
Right.
And so, so they're the responses to our survey questions or our polling questions really carry through this misunderstanding or the misinformation that they might have gotten from the media. Secondly, people are aware that the higher level vehicles at higher level of automation really do bring safety benefits. They know that. They sort of trust in those safety benefits. But there is a greater acceptance of a level four vehicle, which is operating in a constrained environment and operational design domain, mm-hmm. so it's constrained, yeah. Than a level five that can operate anytime, anywhere. A lot of the concepts for a level five vehicle really are vehicles without a steering wheel or without an accelerator or brake pedal, and that makes people very nervous.
Mm-hmm. Is that they just doubt we're ever going to get to level five? Or
no,
is it just feels better to say within these geofencing, you're good on that?
Right, because it's constrained, and so it is... feels safer to people. And also, the real issue with level five is people don't like the thought of losing control of the vehicle.
Right.
The technology is so new that they don't feel it can handle all situations yet. Mm-hmm. And so they want to be able to take over control. Like one person in an interview that we did said, what if the vehicle does something that I don't think is safe? I want to be able to take over control.
Mm-hmm. And so to that extent, I suppose that folks would want to be able to have a vehicle with a steering wheel still, even if
right. They would want to have a vehicle with a steering wheel. They want to be able to override the computer system or the sensors that are on board. And it's interesting because one of the things we found in a series of research studies that we've done is that people don't want to own these as private vehicles yet. That may be something that they would feel more comfortable with in the future, but right now they're more comfortable using them as a shuttle, like a low-speed shuttle, mm-hmm. which is what a lot of the pilots are right now, or as a ride-hailing vehicle. Again, they feel like the ride-hailing vehicle would operate in a constrained environment, and what they've seen is these ride-hailing vehicles, pilots with safety drivers. So they want to experience the vehicles first before they pay to own one.
I was going to say, that from the sound of the way you're saying that, it's not, there's a massive change and no one's getting driver's licenses anymore because everyone wants to share everything and it to be electric and all that. As much as it is, if I was able to rent the fancy new TV until prices come down and
right.
there's enough shows, that kind of a thing.
That's exactly
that there's still
it.
The intent at the end that once these things are ready, I'll probably buy, and I can afford it, then I'll buy one.
Yeah, I mean, I think people would, because one of the things that I read in some recent data, industry data, is that the number one factor that people, and this includes millennials, who people think aren't buying cars, but actually their car purchasing is increasing,
mm-hmm.
But the number one
probably
factor.
Probably because they're 40 now.
Yeah. Right. Well, this is current millennials.
Yeah.
The number one factor is the technology in the car.
Mm-hmm.
Cox Automotive did a study last year, and they found that the technology in the car was more important than brand or model. It's what is the technology that's in that car?
Meaning the driving technology or the touchscreen?
Well, the touchscreen. All of the technology. So I think, the idea that, no one's going to be owning their own car in 10 years, mm-hmm. I don't think that's going to happen because I do think that people, just like they like having their own smartphone or their own laptop or their own media center, they're going to want to have their own traveling environment mm-hmm. with their own media in there and their own technology.
Right. And so what I always find interesting about surveys mm-hmm. is that, all these surveys come out saying X percent of people believe in autonomous vehicles, X percent do not. And it seems like there's a standard deviation of about 50%. Mm-hmm. I mean, you get both sides regularly. How would you respond to folks who are sort of skeptical of the survey results that tend to be collected and sort of gauging public perception.
Right. I think, you know, we tend to forget that this is a new technology. I mean, we talk about it.
It actually doesn't really exist yet.
It doesn't actually really exist
yet. I mean, I think
that's
the point. It's like, do you approve or disapprove of magic flying uniforms?
Exactly.
Or flying cars.
Yeah. So we're asking those types of questions of people. Mm-hmm. And we forget that, especially those people who are doing the surveys, a lot of time they're enmeshed in this dialogue about self-driving vehicles. But really, few respondents to those surveys or polls have actually interacted with AVs.
Yeah.
And so what happens is that leads to them either underestimating or overestimating their value, and that's what we see in those survey results.
Mm-hmm. And so whenever you're crafting these, do the questions give enough background about the potential benefits of AVs and give them some of the knowledge that you feel like maybe they should have or they might have in the future?
Is it just a
point blank asking what their opinion is?
Right. No, I think, we've tried because we realized early on that this is new and people haven't experienced them yet. And we wanted people to be answering the questions from some level of knowledge. Mm-hmm. And so we don't give benefits and we don't give concerns because that would be biasing.
Right.
But what we do is we embed in all of our surveys an educational component. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, we find the best YouTube video that we can, and we embed a link into our online survey that goes through. I can recommend some.
Yeah,
but
love to see them.
But we that both explain and depict the levels of automation, and I think we're doing a pretty good job because our survey results, to me, have some, sniff test kind of realities that make sense. Like, for instance, I was looking at some survey data that we just finished, a survey in Frisco, Texas, and we were asked people there the level of automation of car they would be most comfortable owning or using and the one that they would consider most safe, basically preventing a crash. And among level 2, level 3, level 4, and level 5, the level that received the lowest ratings was level 3. So they caught it.
Right.
That the transition from the car back to the human is a safety risk. Mm-hmm. And they caught it. So I felt really good about that.
And that's not the kind of one that you would like, oh, I have no idea what I'm doing. I'll just pick the middle one. Yeah. Pick one of the extremes. Like definitely 2 or 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that I looked at that data and I said, wow, that's pretty good. We'll have to use that YouTube video again.
is there a horse race number on this that of accept, you know, approve, disapprove type thing? Or is it more we're looking for trends?
We're looking for trends. I think that one of the things I've noticed in the last 5 years of tracking this is that at first you saw as people were getting more knowledgeable because they were reading in the media, they were learning more, they were becoming more aware, that trust was going up, fear was going down. But then it was almost like you reach a certain level of knowledge where you know too much, and then your trust starts going down and your fear starts going up. And so what I think is really important in terms of public opinion is really doing this tracking of trends. Like if you just pick any one point in time right now, you probably will not realistically measure what people's opinions yesterday or people's opinions tomorrow because of the fact that this technology is changing, society is changing, society is aging. We have all these things going on at the same time, so the best we can do is really track and monitor.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And so in your research, I mean, we've had quite a busy past year and a half in autonomous vehicles, including, unfortunately, the tragic incident with Elaine Hertzberg, who was killed by a self-driving Uber last March. What was sort of the public perception backlash that you saw following that?
Hey, can we look at a chart and I can draw the line of where last March happened?
Right, you really can. And the best source for that is AAA. They've been doing surveys on where they ask the percentage of U.S. drivers who would be afraid to ride in a self-driving car. and started in 2016, ended just recently in 2019. And you see a trend where towards the end of 2017, fear of riding in a self-driving vehicle decreases from about 78% to 63%, which is the lowest it is. So 63% of the Americans that they surveyed say they are afraid of riding in a self-driving car. Then we have spring of 2018 when the accident happens, and you see the number go increasing. So it goes from 63% back up to 74%.
Wow.
Right after that. And it's been constant. It's stayed there ever since. But one of the most important things I think about that, you know, sort of masked by the aggregate data, is that within certain population groups, there was a more visceral reaction. So millennials, for instance, in December of 2017, 49% of millennials said they would be afraid to ride in a self-driving car. After that accident happened, it increased 15 percentage points to 64%. It was the largest increase among any age group.
Fascinating. All right, so speaking to the kind of broader you know, your broader role in the research and all of this, how, you know, we hear a lot about how cities and the other public agencies really need this data from tech companies to plan, you know, not just AVs, but obviously TNCs, scooters, all of that. Can you help us in understanding kind of how can that data actually get incorporated into a long-term plan, you know, from an MPO or a state DOT or the cities? Because that, the planning side of it is often what gets kind of put out there as this is why we really need it, not a momentarily enforcement thing. So I'm curious what can actually be used on that.
Right. Well, people are really interested in a couple things. One, origin and destination flows, because you want to know where are people coming from and going to, and what are the volumes for those, you know, throughout a metro region, for instance. You're also interested in the modes that people used. So I want to know within those volumes of going from here to there, how many people are driving their cars, how many are doing it alone, how many people are taking public transit. All of that is very important because it's what I use to plan my infrastructure. And right now we know that there's a lot of, I call it a, with a plethora of options. What we see is that people are becoming polygamous in their mode use. It used to be that, you know, 10 years ago even, you would say, well, we don't even have to do a survey because we know everyone's going to drive alone.
Right.
But now you can't really say that, and you really need to be monitoring and measuring what modes people are using. And my experience and the research that I've been doing is that people are making their decisions, especially in urban areas. I mean, where we see the big changes is in urban areas. I know we need to think about rural, but it's urban. But people make their mode choice decision in the situation, in the moment. It's 11 a.m., I want to go to brunch. This is D.C. And how am I going to get there? Where am I going to go? I'm going to walk or I'm going to Uber, depending on how far away it is. Whereas before, I mean, people, you knew pretty much how you were going to travel. You don't wait until right before you leave to decide what mode you're going to take.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. so I guess in wake of that and just seeing those changes in the past 10 years, there's whenever there's you're making a, you know, a 20-year regional plan, for example, how would you sort of, how can you even start to address this with all these new changes in technology and AVs coming or not coming between now and then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, two quick answers to that. The first is that I think agencies have to be more flexible in their planning. There's a planning paradigm out there called adaptive planning, where you don't make your 20-year plan, or you do make your 20-year plan, but you are flexible and ready to adapt it as you go along and as you learn more about life, what life is really going to be like 20 years from now. Mm-hmm. So that adaptive planning is something that virtually no agencies here in the U.S. do. Mm-hmm. In Europe, there's a couple cities that are starting to do it, especially in the context of mobility as a service, you know, trying to see how demand builds for something like that. The other thing I would mention is that I just finished a study for the National Academies where we really looked at how you could build in AV and CV technologies into regional modeling, planning, and tools, and basically identified small changes to the typical travel demand travel models that people could make to include some of these new modes. So maybe you include a mode that maybe AV, CV is hard to include as a mode, but AV as part of the mode choice options.
And where are they getting data today to do that? You know, for especially at least with a personally owned vehicle, are they getting any data?
You mean
they being planners?
Connected vehicle data. I mean, I'm not sure what data. I'm sorry,
You're talking the telematics about within most vehicles today. Is that at all getting fed in there?
Not really. I did a study a little while ago that looked at the question of who owns the data from connected cars, and we looked at it from the perspective of OEMs, the public agencies, and then the data aggregators like an NREX. And what do you think? They all thought they owned the data. So, but they're not all getting the data. Like the public agencies really were wanting the data and not really getting it. The OEMs were really the people that were having greatest access to the data. They saw themselves as the stewards of the data. The data really belonged to the car owner, but they had oversight over the data for the car owner. And so if you, as a public agency, wanted access to the data, you needed to go to the OEM.
Or if you were an aggregator who wanted to pay them.
Go to the OEM. Yeah, so I mean, I think it's a very tricky question. I think the public agencies have learned that if they could have access to that, I mean, I think there are data sharing models that are out there, that are starting to be out there. And so what, you know, the private sector and the public sector have to learn about how can you create a win-win situation? Mm-hmm. So how do you share data that each of you has that can benefit?
What are you hoping to take away from AVS this year? Or what do you think that others should be taking away? Which could be the same question or absolutely different.
Well, every time I come here, I've been coming to AVS since the beginning. Mm-hmm. And every year I learn a little bit more. Like yesterday I was in a session on consumer perceptions of lower levels of automated technologies, mm-hmm. you know, level one and level two. And the reason why that's important is because if we really want to know about how people feel about higher levels, we need to know how they're now using and understanding the lower levels, because they exist on the road today. The higher levels don't. So that's something we can study. And there was a lot of new information that I gleaned from that session. One is something that I think a lot of people may not know, is that one of the biggest barriers to consumers understanding the technology that is in their vehicle today is the naming conventions of that. Mm-hmm. There are so many. The OEMs, you know, name the technology based on for marketing purposes. Mm-hmm. And there are 40 different terms for automated emergency braking or something like that. So I think, you know, every time I come to AVS, I learn a little bit more and I take it back. In fact, I'm going to be using some of this information that I learned about lower levels and people's levels of understanding and barriers to that and build it into my next surveys. That's what I do.
Very cool.
Very nice. Jana, this has been great, and we really appreciate it. And we look forward to having you back later, so we can kind of check in on how the polling's looking for the industry.
Okay. Can I just do one little last policy plug? pilots are important. We need to have those public road pilots. They aid in knowledge level building and acceptance building of the public. And they also help educate the public as to the capabilities of the technologies that are in their vehicles now.
Amen.
Okay.
So, Johanna, where can folks go? Are you on Twitter, or how can they learn more about you and your work?
TTI has a Twitter account. Mm-hmm. TTI has all sorts of links and things to my work. I am on LinkedIn, and mm-hmm. I post a lot on LinkedIn. So if someone wants to friend me, they will have access to all my new research when it comes out.
Great.
Very nice.
Awesome. Well, we'll put that in the show notes.
Okay.
Pete, where can we find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at SharedMobilitySS.
And you can find me at A.V. Greg R. and the Mobility Podcast at Mobility Podcast. Also check out our shiny website, mobilitypodcast.com.
All right. Well, this has been great. And as we said, stick around. We've got a lot more episodes coming from the Automated Vehicle Symposium here in Orlando.